A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson, and he, Ben Hobson. Each Tuesday, we'll be bringing you all the latest news, views, interviews from across the running world. Ben, tell us what we've got coming up this week.
Well, this week we are speaking with the incredible Anna McNuff, who's just finished running around Britain in her bare feet. Anna started the 2,000-mile journey in the Shetland Islands in June and finally finished in London yesterday. Her feet are, unfortunately, too sore to walk to the studio, so she's calling in on the phone. But that's enough about that. Rick, what have you been doing?
Well, I've been running as well, but in some shoes.
Okay, good.
So I was at the Adidas Fulham 10K this Sunday.
This was the crunch time.
This was crunch time. So there was no excuses. It was perfect weather. It really was. It was that kind of slightly cold if you're kind of walking, but perfect once you go.
Did you wear a vest?
No, you have to wear an Adidas t-shirt.
Of course you do.
As part of it. So you get that as part of your fee.
Yeah.
And a seriously quick course. It was really quick. I got around in 36.50.
I mean, that is fast.
Which is, I was really pleased to get under 37, but it's actually 4 seconds shy of this PB that I somehow ran a couple of years ago. But happy to have broken the 37-minute barrier.
Oh, yeah, well done.
Yeah, it was good, mate, actually. I mean, it's hard. It is really hard work, isn't it, running your best 10K. You don't get a lot of... You know, in a marathon, you might be like, everyone knows it's hard after 20 miles.
Yeah.
And it gets hard a little bit before that, I think, realistically. But in 10K, it's like 4 of those 6 miles are hard. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like, I'll see how I'm feeling with like 800 metres left and I'll put the... It's like, I was really hurting a lot. I've got this routine, mate. It's quite sad, really. I wonder if other people have got it. But if we've got a race that matters to me, I read... This book, How Bad Do You Want It, by Matt Fitzgerald, came out a couple of years ago. And it's essentially sort of 6 or 7 case studies of people who are like, have kind of outsuffered people.
Right.
And he talks about like some of the coping mechanisms you need and kind of, you know, you've got to ask yourself, is it worth it? And you've got to kind of answer in the affirmative. So it gets me quite pumped up. And then I think I always have a terrible night's sleep because I'm kind of worked up.
I think maybe read it a few days before, not the night before.
Yeah, that's probably right. But it makes you kind of hear about these people who are just absolutely fantastic at sort of pushing themselves to the limit. Yeah. And it makes you realise actually that there's probably always more here to give.
I mean, 36.50 is punchy, mate.
Yeah, I was really pleased with it, mate. I was pleased with it. And I should imagine a lot of people got PBs because it wasn't... I think it was one hill. It gets a little bit fiddly at times, but it's a good one if you're targeting.
It's a big old race, actually. You said it was like 5,500 runners?
I think over 5,500 runners, yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? You think, like, chatting to someone about it afterwards, and maybe to some extent that's the kind of parkrun effect. I think just people are, more people are running, aren't they? Mm. And this kind of idea of running a 10K is now, I've got lots of mates doing it, did it yesterday, who I don't think were running a few years ago, and I think it's just becoming... Running is really booming, isn't it? And more and more people are doing it. It's great. It was great to see that many people out on the streets, kind of all different places.
Overtaking them all.
No, not all of them, alas. But it was a good showing of the running world, I think.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
But anyway, let's get on to our guest.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
I'm not in the studio, I'm on the phone.
Oh, you're on the phone, not in the studio, but that's okay, Anna.
No.
I feel like you've got the kind of force of personality to make the phone call work just as well as some people do in person, or if not better.
I also hope that you are just now lying down.
Mm.
Oh my gosh, I tell you what, I've got my feet in. I'm wrapped up. It is blimmin' cold out there,
it
honestly.
Is.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Did you finish? You finished yesterday, did you? That was when the challenge came to an end.
Yeah, around about 2 o'clock yesterday on beautiful Wimbledon Common, which is full of all the slop and glory that I remember in cross country as a kid.
Oh, it must feel a massive relief, Anna, to be back home, not running around in your bare feet. Or are you, in fact, kind of missing it?
Oh, it's weird, you know. Like, I definitely was kind of happy sad yesterday when I got into the last mile and I thought, man, this is it. And I was, you know, I had like 100 runs with me yesterday and I just thought, this has been amazing, but I am just full of relief. I just am so happy about opening my eyes and not having to go running and being able to put shoes on and just being able to relax a bit. So, yeah, huge relief.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Are you now just desperate for some shoes?
Yeah, I'm just stealing them off strangers. I've been amazed with the whole minimalist barefoot journey. Like, my... physically, like in terms of my muscles and stuff, I've had one calf injury in 2,300 odd miles, and other than that, like, my body's been amazing. So I'm definitely in minimalist shoes for life, but it got a bit restrictive at points over gravel and all the kinds of different surfaces I've been on. It's nice to be able to put shoes back on.
I was going to ask you actually about surfaces. I want you to grade these in best to worst. Okay, surfaces.
Okay, right.
Okay, so we've got grass, sand, cement, hard-packed trails, or gravel?
Okay, I'm going to go. The best is actually sand.
Okay.
I'm going to go sand. If you can find the sweet spot between the soft sand and the hard sand, that sweet spot down the middle seems a wide beach. Then I would go grass. Then I would go cement, because if I get stuck in cement, then maybe I can just kind of stand there and then I don't have to carry on running. People can just see me like a statue. So I'm going to put that one in the middle. And then I'm going to go... hard packed, the next one down, and then the last one, the worst, is gravel. That's the pit.
If you ever parked somewhere that's gravel and you haven't got your shoes on and you go, oh, I've just got to get something from the car, and you walk 5 steps in gravel, that's the worst.
It's like being lightly slapped around the face.
Yeah.
That's exactly what gravel is. Yeah. So, yeah, it just feels like that.
I wonder if you could all just remind us all, Anna, about the motivation behind running through Britain in your bare feet.
Yeah, I know it sounds bonkers. I fully accept that. It's all been for girl guiding. So it was about encouraging girls to get out there, do adventures, get messy, muddy, but ultimately to take on things that kind of push them, you know, that test them a little bit and put them on that line between terrified and excited. So I was just encouraging girls. I did about 3 talks a week. I think in the end, I spoke to about 1,700 girls all the way through the country about taking on those kind of challenges and just trying to show them that girls do adventures too. We love getting messy and muddy.
So can we expect a sort of a next generation of barefoot females attempting these kind of challenges?
Yeah, I think I'm in a bit of trouble with a lot of parents down the country. Also, there's a lot of children that want big pink hair now, so I've got to fight that battle. But yeah, it was amazing actually, because kids, in a way, they're curious about it, but they don't see it. They don't see why it's quite as mad as adults would. And they all want to slip their shoes off and run around outside. So I've definitely, I think, encouraged a few more kids to kick their shoes off for a while. But I have explained to them, I said, it's probably best on grass or sand, but, you know, go for it.
Yeah, yeah, glad to hear it.
Well, was there any point at which you thought that this was unachievable when you were halfway through the country or at the beginning, maybe? I don't really know when you thought
I'd say day three.
Right.
I'd say day three. Honestly, I'm being serious when I... because I'm used to taking on crazy stuff. And normally you start and then everything kind of releases and you're let into the adventure and you're gone.
Yeah.
But on this one, 3 days in, my feet were sore. And I'd only started, I did like a 7-mile day, then an 11-mile day, then a 15. So I was building up gradually. And my feet were in agony. I was sleeping for 12 hours a night, but absolutely just bushed. And the tarmac was quite tough up in Shetland. And I was having to like scramble through fields and getting my toes stuck in peat bogs and all of this stuff. And I just thought, have I gone too far this time? And of course, at the start of the journey, the whole energy on social media is, yeah, you're off, awesome, like you're going to do it, Anna. And I was just thinking, am I going to do it? Or have I just gone too far? Am I just going to be miserable for 5 months? And then I think it was about 6 weeks in, I woke up one morning and I went and like bashed out like 24 miles and it was fine. And I thought, do you know what? It's going to be fine. It's going to be hard, but I'm going to be okay. I'm going to keep going.
Still, 6 weeks. 6 weeks is a long time to be sort of like struggling along.
Yeah, it is. It was a lot of questioning myself. But I thought, and that's when I just, it's like anything, isn't it? It's like running a marathon or even a 10K. Like, I just brought it back down to the, right, I'll just do the next few miles. I'll just think about the next few miles and keep going like that. And then there was a point after about 1,000 miles where I got a foot infection. And that was 2 weeks off my feet. And I thought, oh no, is this the end of the run? Like, am I done? Mm-hmm. And I actually managed to get going again. So that was cool, but terrifying at the time.
What did you learn about barefoot running, do you think, through this process? Because I think it's probably a very misunderstood part of running.
Yeah, because I mean, I think there are a lot of barefoot evangelists out there, and I think I'm kind of like, you know, you should be able to run and not be in pain. Whatever you put your feet into or don't, in order to enjoy the running experience, then that's what's best for you. You know, I just think, but I do think sometimes people forget about that minimalist end of the spectrum, and also forget that our bodies are pretty freaking awesome. And they can adapt. And I think the big thing with barefoot running is I did what everyone else did. You know, a few years ago, I went out, bought the Vibram Five Fingers, ran 10K and smashed my calf to bits and went, I'm never doing that again. But I did take like a good, I guess, like 3.5 years to get myself used to it for this run. So I think what gets misunderstood is, unfortunately, people, I guess you've got to go out and you've got to do, you know, you've got your set times to do running, haven't you? And some people don't have the time to almost go backwards before they go forwards. And that's, I think, if you're going to be a minimalist runner, you've got to give it that time. But my body's in good shape. And I have to say, like I said, I'm going to stay in minimalist shoes after this, because I think for distance, it's a good way to go.
You mentioned your foot infection, which I don't know if people following you on social media probably would have had far too much insight into.
Did you see that picture?
Yeah,
did
it was
you,
gross.
Did you see it? Did you enjoy it? Were
no.
you eating breakfast?
No, it was. To be fair, I think that I've never seen anyone else's feet more.
Sharing is caring.
It's true. But do you think, I mean, that must have been an actual, a real low light, having a foot infection, because there was, I think that people would probably assume immediately when you started this whole venture that a foot injury or something nasty like that is going to be the end of it.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I tried to keep it in perspective, which was, of course, this was going to happen at some point. It was kind of a case of when. But I think the thing I struggled with the most was the unknown of it, because I'm used to getting muscular injuries, you know, and that you kind of know what you're dealing with because you've been through it before. And also, if you don't move that area, it doesn't hurt. Whereas the scariest thing about having this foot infection, and because I had such hard skin on the bottom of my feet and the infection was like 10 layers down, A, it was just waves of pain when I wasn't even moving my foot. And B, I had no idea how long it was going to go on for and what would then happen. You know, is my foot going to go black? You know, am I about to get sepsis or something? You know, I'm asking myself all these questions. And but like gradually you just had to think, right, trust yourself, what's going on right this very second. I managed to get some antibiotics and I was actually rescued by an ultra running doctor.
Whoa, amazing.
he said, I can come and see you, Anna. His name's Adam, legend of a guy. I took to Twitter to try and find a doctor that actually got it, because a lot of people were telling me just rest, go away for 3 days. And I said, I'm in quite a lot of pain. And this ultra running doctor said, I can come and see you, but I've got to go and run a marathon on a track first and then I'll be there.
That's brilliant. Well, apart from the ultra running doctor, you were joined by a lot of people on this trip, weren't you? You kind of encouraged people to go and run different legs with you.
Yeah, this is what was amazing. So I had over 2,000 people join me on various stages and just a day at a time. And there was this recurring theme of people coming out saying they would just run a few miles, or maybe the furthest they'd done was maybe 7 or 8 miles. And then they'd end up staying for the whole 22-24 mile day. And it became like almost like their own journey within my journey. And I was stood there running at the back thinking, I'm not doing anything, you know. And they were going, thanks, Anna, thanks so much for making me do this. And I'm thinking, I'm not making you do it, you're doing it yourself. And I think it was just, it gave people quite often, because they wouldn't get the information on when to meet me until very last minute. And so they'd kind of written off their whole day and got childcare sorted and, you know, abandoned their car on some road somewhere. And when do you ever do that when you're going for a run? And it was all, they didn't know where they were going. They left the navigation to me. So I think that sense of adventure and the fact that we often stop for a coffee or at the pub halfway through that kept people going. They just thought, oh, do you know what? I'll just carry on for a few more miles and then maybe I'll call my other half or I'll get a bus or something. And then they'd end up staying to the end. So it was amazing.
Oh, that's great.
Was it ever, because there's a lot of miles covered and obviously people joined you, but was it ever a lonely experience?
Yes, definitely. Not lonely. I never got lonely in terms of not having anyone with me because I'm totally fine with my own company. But I definitely got weary and lonely in the sense that it's a big thing to carry on your shoulders. You know, this constant sort of pressure and the challenge you've set yourself. And no matter how much other people are trying to help you out with logistics and making life easier for you, at the end of the day, you're the one that's got to run the miles. You're the one that's got to give the talks. And you've got to find a way to keep yourself going. And that just gets exhausting. And so I think that was the loneliest thing, is thinking, no one else can take this from me. No one else cares as much as I do, absolutely, about what I'm doing. That is weary when you've been doing that for 6 months, constantly picking yourself up, carrying on, picking yourself up. So that's why I think it's such a relief to be done, to go, oh, I can be as demotivated as I like now.
Well, we were going to ask, actually, I mean, how do you follow this, Anna? You've run barefoot 2,000 miles across the length of Britain. What's the next challenge?
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, I think I normally let things lie for a while before the new adventure pops into my head. But I don't always think it's about, for me anyway, it's not about, you know, faster and harder and longer, all that stuff. I think for me, it's about curiosity and answering a question of, is that possible or isn't it? And that's what this was about. It just happened to be very difficult as well. I'm not sure what's next, really, but I'm just going to cruise into Christmas and then start the new year. And I've got a lot of writing to do. I've got a book to write. So I think that'll be next, sitting in a dark room with some coffee.
You briefly touched upon you spending 3.5 years getting ready for this. So if anyone wished to follow in your footsteps, what advice would you give them?
I love it, following my footsteps.
Right. Oh yeah, we don't just cobble this script together, Anna. This is serious.
If anyone follows my footsteps, I would say, first thing I say to them is just walk around in minimalist shoes. Get yourself a pair of shoes with less support and just wear them in your day-to-day life. Don't go running in them. You know, just use it to walk around in, because you'll already feel a workout and you'll feel your muscles start to lengthen and change and you get a bit stronger. So I would say that is the first step. Just walk around in a different pair of shoes with less support and see how you feel.
Oh, Anna, fantastic. And thank you so much for joining us. It is a truly fantastic thing that you've done. It was incredibly impressive.
Thanks very much. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So just speaking with Anna, weren't we, about barefoot running?
Yeah.
Which I think it comes in for a lot of flack, partly as a kind of backlash against, you know, the kind of born to run effect.
Yeah, and also the knock-on effect of the whole Vibram, like, court cases and companies claiming things and people adopting shoes that they shouldn't have and all that sort of stuff. I think that there was so much sort of hype around it and then it imploded very quickly.
Yeah, that's right. I think people kind of over-amplified the benefits of barefoot running.
Yeah.
And the Vibram court case was essentially them saying you've made certain claims here about running barefoot as a lack of, you know, you would reduce injury risk. But I think it's worth bearing in mind a couple of things. Some of the world's best runners grew up barefoot.
Yep.
So it's still a thing in East Africa, just partly through poverty, really.
Mm.
You know, they just don't have shoes. So, like, Haile Gebrselassie, Kipchoge, both decent runners, I think we'd agree.
They're all right.
They both grew up running in bare feet. And obviously, you know, it's not to suggest that that's the reason that they're good, but it does play a huge role, I think, in the kind of formative years.
Developmental side of it. In terms of small, malleable children bones.
Sure.
If kids are running around, you know, everything's pliable and soft and muscles grow around these things and form. And so, yeah, if kids are running around barefoot, then their feet naturally grow in a way that accommodates that movement pattern.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think so. A kind of a childhood spent out of shoes, as much as practicality allows, is probably still a good thing,
yeah,
I think.
For sure.
And Anna said that, didn't she? She kind of talked about it's as important to think about the shoe you're wearing when you're not running. So your kind of lifestyle shoe.
Mm.
So your kind of Vivo barefoots. Or I think actually a lot more companies are cottoning on to that.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously my boy is three and he's had a few pairs of Vivos.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in my head, I'm just like, he can't run around barefoot as much as I'd like to let him do that in Leighton. I don't think it's advisable.
Yeah.
So he's got his Vivos and I kind of feel like that's a nice thing for him. Like, in my head, I feel like I'm giving him the best footwear developmental chance. I mean, maybe not. Kids just move around as they want to, but I kind of feel like that's a good thing.
I agree. There's these amazing images online. You can easily Google it, but it's where someone went and I think it was early 20th century, looked at a kind of barefoot tribe the shape of their feet, which are very much kind of fan feet,
So
kind of like thin at the heel and fanned out, so quite large spaces between each toe. So you get this very, very, very sort of stable base from which to walk and run. And that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? You can think actually if you've got stability and strength in the foundations or something, that's going to have great knock-on effects to how something overall moves.
Well, I mean, if you look at the gait cycle, it's called a toe-off, right? Mm. So when you launch, you know, the final end of the gait is when you're pushing off and that's your toe-off. And then if you think, how often do you genuinely feel like you're toeing off or are you just moving forward with your whole foot?
Mm.
And I think that's where the whole, like, the separate argument between these two things is, like, in a shoe your foot becomes almost like a one entity, whereas in a barefoot ideal is that every single toe, metatarsal, whatever, is an individual part of the gait. And I feel like that's where the two things kind of, like, the barefoot thing is advantageous because you're kind of like the movement within the foot is at its most in terms of, like, biomechanically.
I agree. In my limited sort of experience of doing barefoot running, I do think Anna's right in that we need to think about surfaces as well. Because I think the easiest way, isn't it, is to go out and run on cement, I think you think, or, like, you know, just concrete. But I do think the kind of natural surfaces, when we talk about natural running, I think we need to bear that in mind, that the surface needs to come into that natural argument as well. And actually man-made surfaces, if you say, look, we were born to run in bare feet, maybe that's true, but we weren't born to run barefoot on concrete, I don't think. There's not any kind of, like, evolutionary history of doing that.
Yeah.
So I think if you are going to do it, yeah, stuff like grass, or if you are lucky enough to live near sand. It'd be interesting to know what our listeners have to think about barefoot running.
Yeah, and if they do add that into their training, I'd like to hear more, like, if people go, yeah, I do all my sessions, but I always finish with a few barefoot strides or something like that, just to sort of keep that, you know, natural running instinct alive.
Keeping your foot in the game.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Well, we received a lot of feedback on last week's episode, which discussed running etiquette, or sweatiquette, as the cool kids say.
All the cool kids.
Yeah, they're all saying sweatiquette.
Yeah.
Rather about happy slapping or something.
Oh, my God.
To recap, RW sub-editor and arbiter of good taste, John Carroll, came on to discuss how a polite and considerate runner should behave. And we discussed everything from kind of shirtless running to suspiciously quick sprint finishes.
Yes.
And John thought both those things, among other things, were kind of signs of the impolite runner. Anyway, got some great response from people. So Marianne Fikine, I'm going to say is how you pronounce the name, and apologies if that's not right. She says, first of all, thank you for the amazing podcast.
Finish. Finish that letter.
No problem. She said, in this episode, though, I felt I had to share my thoughts with you. She said, first, the comments as runners pass you by. I love that. When people pass me by and say something motivational, I assume it's out of kindness and love it. On sprint finishes, I am guilty and I can see how it is annoying to some. However, it's not because I don't give it my all. I just finished my first half marathon and loved it, but was completely dead in the end and thought I was near death.
Oh, dear.
But somehow, when I got to the finish line, my legs took over and I sprinted my way through. And she said it felt like a bit of an outer body experience, which I think, yeah, I can understand that.
It's digging deep.
Digging deep, yeah. Exactly. And she said, finally, there was a comment about shirtless or topless running. And you said this was only for men we were talking about. And she said, that's silly. Women could be considered running topless with a sports bra. There was no reason why we shouldn't be discussed. Personally, I'm not a fan of topless running for men or women, whether they're fit or not. That's the end of my rant. Hope some of that makes sense.
It does.
So thanks very much, Marianne. Yeah, I think we had another Ben as well.
Yeah, we did. We had an email from Roger Major. Apologies, Roger, if that's not great. He wrote to us and he said, as a runner of 2 years who joined the sport from Cycling World after a nasty crash, I enjoyed your piece on etiquette immensely, as the life on two wheels used to be riddled with rules such as what kit is acceptable. For example, yellow jerseys should only be worn by the winners of the Tour de France, not office fatties on a Sunday poodle, and replica is only acceptable if it's retro. But back to running. A thing I do a lot in races if I'm overtaken or near the end is to say, go on, mate, show us how it's done. The recipient nearly always takes it well and comes back with an equally self-deprecating retort. I've actually made a couple of Strava friends this way. Beat stony silence any day.
Which is great. And yeah. Finally, most thrillingly of all, Rachel Stevens.
From S Club 7.
I don't believe it's Rachel. Oh. She says, I found the tips on running etiquette really entertaining and I love the etiquette song.
Oh, God. I had a small bit of news that I wanted to add to this wonderful episode.
Nice.
And it was more of a shout out to the Conwy Half Marathon, which took place on Sunday, the 17th of November. And ahead of the race, Run Wales, the organisers, warned runners that if they dropped their litter during the race, then they could be disqualified.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? That's a good, like...
I like that hard line.
Yeah, zero tolerance kind of attitude to it. Yeah.
So I thought, you know, big bit of tip of the hat to those guys, because I feel like that's it's a bold move to tell people that. And I think pulling people from a race, if they're slogging away through a half marathon, perhaps casually, accidentally perhaps, discard their gel wrapper or something like that. That's it.
Yeah, but I think we need to take bold steps, don't we, with this stuff? Like, it's one of the few bad things about mass races, isn't it? Is actually that they can leave quite a big footprint and quite a lot of litter behind. So, good, fair play. Good on Conwy. We're behind that.
Yeah, well done them. That's it. That was the news.
Excellent.
There has been more, but that's it.
That brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Anna McNuff, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a review and we will see you again next week when we will be speaking to presenter, author and runner Vassos Alexander.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.